Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. By now, we're used to wearing technology that keeps an eye on our health. We have watches that track our heart rate and Fitbits that count our steps. But the latest technology goes deeper, inside you. The FDA just approved a digital pill. It has a sensor that tells doctors whether and when patients have taken their medication. Some say it's a helpful reminder. Others say it's the beginning of Big Brother watching from the inside. This hour on Point, the arrival of the digital pill when the internet goes inside you. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Would you take a pill that reports on you from the inside? Is this the future of medicine? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, we will talk about the Republican push to repeal the Affordable Care Act's individual mandate as part of their big tax plan. But first, digital pills. Joining me from New York is Caroline Chen, biotech and healthcare reporter for Bloomberg. Caroline, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what's this pill and how does it report to my doctor?
So there's a pill, a patch, and an app. The pill itself, which is Otsuka's Abilify, it's a pill for depression, bipolar disorder, and schizophrenia. It's been on the market for a very long time. So this is just a reformulation, and now it has a little ingestible sensor embedded in it. So when you take it and it gets to your stomach, it's activated by your stomach fluids, and it sends a little signal to a patch that's worn on your stomach, and then that patch sends a signal to the app on your phone, and that will record that it's been taken.
And who gets to know that?
So the way that the companies are doing it now is they're starting a small pilot program. It's been approved by the FDA, but they're not just sort of like letting it out into the wild. So they're starting small, working with certain hospital groups, and the agreement is that the patient has to give the information to their doctor. So, but only the doctor. And then you can choose, for example, if you have a caregiver, a spouse, a family member who you want to have that information, it's up to the patient to opt into that.
The patient has to give the information to a doctor, meaning if I agree to take this pill, I'm also agreeing to share what it learns from the inside out?
Yes. And that, I think, is because they want to see if they can use that information to improve the care for the patients. That's the whole proposition from the companies here, that if you work together with your doctor and your doctor is able to help keep track of whether or not you're complying, that you can end up having better health outcomes. And since they're just starting with something new, I think they want to gather that data so they can show people whether or not that actually helps. So for now, at least, they've said, if you take this pill, you have to share that information with your doctor. And again, there is a version of Abilify on the market. There are generic versions at this point in time, which don't have the sensor in there. So if you don't want to have that version, I don't think anybody's going to push it on you.
This would be the first sensor-embedded medicine, this on Abilify, which is used to help in the treatment of depression or bipolar disorder. But this, presumably, this ingestible sensor could be attached to more or less any pill, Caroline?
Yeah. The company that makes it, called Proteus Digital Health, is a company out in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley that's made the sensor, and they partnered with Otsuka, which is a big pharma company, for this first pill. But that sensor could go in any pill.
And it's ingestible, meaning whatever this sensor, which transmits a signal to this bandage on your abdomen, it can go right through your system. What's it made out of?
I don't know actually the full details of exactly what goes into it, but they've promised me that it's completely safe for you, and that always is the FDA's first and foremost concern. Like, is it safe for the patient? So the fact that it's FDA approved does give me some comfort here. It is ingestible, and it won't affect your system.
I mean, I'm looking here at reports. I do know it's made out of silicon, magnesium, and copper, at the very least. As you say, it can go right through the system. I've got a little tape here of the co-founder, CEO, Proteus Digital, who came up with this. And this was back in 2014. They've been pushing this for a while now. And here he is, very enthusiastic about digital pills, describing why the technology is safe, he says, talking about what the comparable amount, I guess, of these elements, silicon or magnesium or copper, that might be in ordinary foods. Here we go. The head of Proteus Digital on digital pills.
People said 10 years ago when we started doing this that we were nuts, and they were absolutely right. Nuts is actually a key ingredient in what we deliver. We have an ingestible computing platform that's made from dietary minerals. Basically, this device is made of a couple of cashews, a mouthful of halibut, and an inch of banana. It is specifically designed to be embedded in any medicine at almost zero cost.
So I guess he's talking about the equivalent amount of silicon or magnesium or copper in, as he says, a couple of cashews, a mouthful of halibut fish, and an inch of banana. And with that, your body can just send it right on through after it's sent the signal saying, pill taken. But it's part of a bigger vision here, as you well know, Caroline. And here's Andrew Thompson again with the company making these, talking about how this is going to take the internet sort of right into us via medicine.
This is the best opportunity in 100 years for this industry, because what I'm describing to you is our ability to combine the internet with things. We are putting the internet on your drugs. There's roughly 15 trillion drugs in the supply chain today. We can take every single medicine that's ever been approved and turn it into a digital object.
Okay, holy smokes, Caroline. So down the road, is it possible that we're going to have this on every, you know, lots of pills we take so that somebody somewhere can be tracking exactly what we've taken?
You know, I think he's right that technologically we'll have the ability to do this. But the question is, will this be accepted by the community? And by that I mean, will it be accepted by doctors? Will it be accepted by patients? Is this something, ultimately, the question that we're all going to ask is, does this actually help my life, right? I don't actually think that every patient is going to want this. Some people are just going to be like, I don't want to be tracked that way. And that should be fine. I think patients should always have a choice. But there could be patients that say, yeah, this is going to be, you know, this is something I need because I can't keep track of my medications, but I do realize when I take them regularly, they help me. So I'd like to have help. So, you know, he has grand visions of this being in every pill. I'm a little skeptical. I think I'd have to wait and see, you know, as more data comes out from these studies, whether or not this actually helps patients in the long run. And I think it'll be a slow and gradual change, as things always are in the healthcare industry. Things don't just change overnight.
I mean, once you start talking about putting the internet inside us via pills or otherwise, we want to know who's got an interest in this. I mean, I guess the first one is if you've got some people, maybe older people, who may have a lot of pills to take and may find it difficult to keep track whether they've taken it or not, Caroline. I guess this could keep a record for them of what's sloshing around in their gut.
Yeah, hypothetically, that would be one of the primary audiences I want to be targeted. And people have tried different things. You know, there are digital pill bottles where it tracks when you've opened and closed them, for example. So maybe that would be an option for somebody who's like, well, I don't want to ingest this. That's a little bit too invasive for me. So I think over time we'll just see a spectrum of tools. Maybe it's just, you know, an app on your phone where you log where you've taken it when you've done it, or it is a digital pill bottle, or maybe you'll actually go all the way and want to have a digital pill. I think the important thing here is to really have options for patients, you know, depending on their comfort levels and not to force anything.
This first application is with Abilify, and that's about depression or maybe schizophrenia. And in that case, I guess you have patients who may not want to take their medicine because of side effects or because of maybe their mental health condition itself makes them resist it. For the doctor's interest here, I guess, Caroline, is that they'll know what their patient's actually doing in terms of taking the medicine.
Absolutely. And I think what doctors tend to be most concerned about is cases where people end up in the ER or they end up in the hospital just because they've missed medicines. And there's some of these, including some of the mental health disorders that Abilify is used for, where they've seen with some patients that they stop taking medications, they can go downhill very quickly and end up in the ER because they have, for example, a psychotic break if you're a schizophrenia patient. So the hope is to prevent those things from happening. And again, this may not be for every patient. It may not be right for every patient. But I think that has been the motivation behind technologies like this, which is, can we help you prevent sort of the worst outcomes?
I mean, then you get to the pharmaceutical companies. I guess they would be happy in a way because people won't be skipping taking their pills. So they're consuming their pills. So they're buying the product.
Absolutely. And I think right now there's always so much competition. You know, Abilify has multiple generic versions that are competing on the market right now. So if you're able to say, hey, you know, we actually help patients take their medicine, you know, so they're not buying the pills and then only taking half of them and actually not getting benefit, that's an argument that a big pharma company can bring to an insurer and say, hey, you should have all of your patients on our drug because we actually make sure that they take it, you know, so we're bringing you more value. So you should, you know, have your patients take our version rather than another version on the market. So for sure, the drug makers have their own interests at heart here as well.
And then the insurance companies, they have an interest in this, I suppose, because if people need medication, we're talking Abilify here, but this presumably will end up on other pills as well. If they need the medication but don't take it, as you say, they could end up in bigger health problems that will be costly for the insurer. So the insurance company may want, I wonder if they might even give an incentive to people. If you take the pill with the sensor on it and you can have it for 20% off, because then we know you're taking it and it won't end up in the ER.
Right, absolutely. I think a lot of insurance companies are very concerned about catching people early, doing more preventative medicine. You can see them saying, we really want you to be taking your Lipitor and keeping your cholesterol down, you know, because we don't want you to have heart conditions down the road. And those are far more expensive for an insurance company to have to manage than just paying for your Lipitor.
What happens if the police show up at some point with a, I don't know, a search warrant, and they want to know what pills I'm taking and how often? Or let's say I'm on parole. Could they be doing drug testing via a device like this, or ensuring that I stay on some kind of mood regulator if I'm on parole? What about that kind of state intervention vision, Caroline?
I mean, if we can imagine it, it can be a possibility, but I do think that there would be a lot of backlash against something like that if that went down. And talking to some of these pharma companies, I think part of the reason why Otsuka says we're doing this very limited launch at the beginning is because they're scared of it being used in the wrong ways like that and of there being a big pushback against the technology as a whole. So I do think, you know, my hope is that we're careful and thoughtful about where this sort of technology gets used, because I do see there potentially being benefit for some patients, not necessarily all patients. And yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, as we've seen with all technology, as with the internet, you know, things sometimes get used in ways that are not, you know, the original intention. So we'll have to see how this develops in the coming years.
Who knew that the Internet of Things was going to reach right into our bodies? Maybe we should have anticipated that. Now the FDA has signed off on this pill. More to come. Caroline Chen covering all this for Bloomberg. Thank you very much for being with us from New York today, Caroline.
Thank you.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the coming of the digital pill. You take it, it tracks you. And where that takes medicine, a pill that talks to your doctor and more. It's just been approved by the FDA. A little ingestible sensor right there on the pill that talks to the world outside. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Would you mind taking this? Would it be helpful for you? Would it give you comfort so you don't forget the pill so others know what's going on? Would it freak you out that you're sort of swallowing Big Brother here, that it's sort of reporting on you from your very guts? Good thing or not? It is certainly where a whole lot of medicine is going. Abilify, a version of that, will be the first pill equipped with this. That's what the FDA has just approved. It's an antidepressant. It amplifies the effect of medicine for schizophrenia or depression. Here's an Abilify ad.
My antidepressant worked hard to help with my depression, but sometimes I still struggled to get going, even get through the day. So I was honest with my doctor. I told her I'd been feeling stuck for a long time, and I wondered if there was something more we could do. She said that for some people, an antidepressant alone only helps so much. That's when she suggested we add Abilify.
Okay, you've probably heard that on television, but then once you're in there, are you taking it? Does your doctor know if you're taking it? Have you remembered if you're taking it? Here's the company who makes the digital pill explaining, as they see it, the advantage.
Your health rests on your shoulders. And that can be serious, confusing, and a little scary. With Proteus, you can take charge again, because our tools are powered by you. The sensor, patch, and phone work together to help you keep on top of your health.
Help you keep on top of your health, and others stay on top of it too, who are looking after your health, family, doctors, and more. With me right now in the studio is Brian Anthony, director of MIT's Master of Engineering in Manufacturing program. He's co-director there of the Medical Electronic Device Realization Center. Brian Anthony, it's great to have you here. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
Does the digital pill surprise you at all? You must have been aware of this coming for a long time now.
It doesn't surprise me, and it's actually not the first pill. What's new about it?
The first pill talking to the world, you mean?
Well, it's not the first ingestible pill. What's actually...
We all take pills. We've taken them since the dawn of time. But you mean a digitally empowered pill? Or what?
It's not the first digitally empowered pill.
Mm-hmm.
What's new about it is the combination of the pill and the drug. For example, there's been on the market at least a decade, probably longer, from Given Imaging, the pill cam, which is a pill about the size of a large multivitamin that you swallow that takes camera images.
So it's going to look at your gut sort of all the way down. Is everything in there if the doctor needs information? Okay, that's one. And that makes one sort of transit through you and it learns what it learns. But now here we have a pill that's talking in their point. You get the point that the doctor can now track, and that might be particularly of interest if it's a mental health condition. But anybody could be forgetful, I guess.
Yeah. No, I think the interesting thing here, the big question that people are asking, it's the compliance issue. And it's I'm taking medicine.
Are you following
Am I following the regimen?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, personally, I forget to take medication. I don't know if I took it. And so I think there's a
great
opportunity.
Did I take that pill this morning?
Did I
not?
Yeah.
And here you look at an app on your phone. There's a lot more we want to learn about where this goes. We've got a lot of callers right here. Fayetteville, Georgia. Henry's calling. Hello, Henry. You're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Well, you know, I just wanted to point out the idea in general, the digital pill. I mean, we're now at a point in our lives and in this generation where we can say we're developing technology that can harmonize with the human body. And I had a father, and he went through several surgeries in his back, and he was over medicated the first surgery, hyper medicated to even I would say, and
yeah,
you know, it really affected him. It really took a lot of time out of his life where he was just completely just mush. And I know for a fact if he had the digital access to his body and being able to point out how much and when, it would have helped him.
You're talking about opioids or painkillers here that maybe he got deeply into after the surgeries?
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, it happened extremely quick, and it created a very drastic effect on my dad. And you know, if you can step back and look at yourself, evaluate yourself, and say, yes, I can ingest this pill.
Mm-hmm.
That will monitor my body and it will regulate how much I'm taking. I could advocate for it at that point.
Henry, we've got it. I mean, I don't know if we're getting all the way to the regulation point yet, but definitely a kind of monitoring in here. Brian, I see you kind of nodding when Henry talks about harmonizing technology in the human body. Opioids are interesting. They're prescribed for pain after, let's say, surgery like Henry's father. But you don't want to be taking them forever. I guess this would could let somebody know if it were attached to the OxyContin, whatever, when that pill was taken. And if it's, I don't know, 2 years after the surgery, it might be like, what's up here?
Mm-hmm. I think the compliance issue, but also the drug interaction. So if it were, you know, I know I took that pill, but I know I took this pill and that pill and that there's a potential harmful interaction, that's something that the pharmacists now try to detect and monitor, then they do it reasonably well. But actually having a signal that it knows I took this pill and I'm complying with as it prescribed, but it potentially interacts with this other thing. And the caller also alluded to a future opportunity, which is controlling the titration, controlling the delivery. If I'm taking the medicine, I ingest a pill that instead of just saying I took it, actually monitors something about my internal system and chooses to let more or less drug out.
Titration is like almost like how it dissolves inside your body, the rate at which the medicine is actually delivered inside.
Correct.
Ah, wow. Sort of in real time and maybe in relation to what else is going on in there. Ted in Akron, Ohio. Ted, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My concern is with patients who are schizophrenic. Schizophrenia is a disease that frequently comes along with feelings of paranoia about, agencies planting devices in your body. And now this is a medication that is used for schizophrenia. that actually does have a device in it. So I would be concerned that this is actually maybe going to decrease people taking their medication and maybe leading to the opposite effect that is intended, even though I agree with the intended effect. I think it's important to prevent things like suicides, which are common with schizophrenia. Anyway, that's my comment.
Yeah, that is very interesting that this could maybe elicit the very sort of kind of paranoid reaction that you worry about in some of the mental health conditions that Abilify is intended to treat, Brian.
No, it's interesting that they picked this medication as the starting point, because I think if we instead picked an opioid or a medication that had less of a mental health connection, where the people that we're intending to help do have this fear of Big Brother, may have the fear of Big Brother, it's interesting they started with this as the target first
medicine.
And yet
that's kind of the point here, because they may already be thinking that what kind of medicine am I on, because of the paranoia that comes along with it, with the mental health condition.
Correct. Right.
Wow. So it could work both ways, but surely it will get people's attention here, because it really will be talking to, in this case, that patch on your abdomen and then to somebody's cell phone app somewhere. Jackson in Boston. Jackson, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So this company, Proteus, might just want to consider the name Morpheus, and this might just be more of a Matrix deal. This sounds, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of positives to this for the companies, for the people. We're in an age of hacking. We're in an age where the information can just get taken, flipped around, remixed, and now you are getting different information coming to you. So just want to hear about that and the concerns of privacy and how you would really get this stuff going, this system going, where it's not Morpheus, Matrix, and now you've got this weirdness happening with Russians hacking the system. And then Amazon buys the whole company.
Yeah, and pretty soon they know every little gurgle in your gut and well beyond. Let me I really appreciate your call. Let me ask our technologist first, then we'll take it to an ethicist standing by for us. But Brian, how about it? Give us a sense. I mean, you work in this, you know, the Medical Electronic Device Realization Center. So you must have a big vision of what's coming here, and you hear the Matrix fear from our caller. What do you say to it?
Data will be hacked. That's absolutely going to happen. But in this era, and I'm always surprised at how much people are willing to share on social media. And so there's a trade-off. We get this additional digital information that allows us to customize our healthcare. Right now, the healthcare that is delivered by and large is based on a population. How do I compare to the population at large? And if I instead had data that is acquired on me throughout my life in the context of daily living continuously, I can now instead look at change of myself instead
of
how
I anticipate. You anticipate one day data from inside our bodies monitored lifelong nearly.
Yeah, inside, outside, on the body, you know, acquiring continuous physiological data based on what we do and being able to personalize our healthcare delivery on our own needs compared to how we are changing over time. If my blood pressure changes by 10% in one day, whether or not it's within the cardiac or the American Heart Association's guidelines, that's significant. And so knowing the delta with respect to myself as opposed to how I fit within a population is the longer-term opportunity of much of the medical electronics that we're envisioning.
And you see this coming, this sort of full awareness all the time, lifelong.
I do.
Will it be something embedded in my musculature, in my intestine lining, in my brain?
We're seeing it already. We see the Fitbits. We see the Fitbits.
Yeah, that's just on my wrist.
It's
with
on
my
the
pulse
wrist
and my
things that are slightly injected into the body, so slightly subdermal. One of the big issues with a Fitbit, for example, is also the compliance of wearing the device.
Mm-hmm,
so we can put things slightly subdermally or into the muscle and have continuous complied observation. That's going to make it a lot easier to actually acquire that data that you're going to need to have that personalized healthcare.
What about somebody turning around and using that in a malicious way? I mean, the Matrix, you know, we've all got that image of all those pods hooked up and being fed illusions. Does it put us at risk of that? Not just hacking, but I don't know. Big Brother comes to power and wants to know where you are, what you're doing. You're on parole. Take this mood stabilizer, and if you don't, you go back to jail. I don't know.
It's definitely a concern, and also go back to when Dick Cheney was vice president. There was a lot of concern over the hacking of his pacemaker. And I'm not sure whether or not they turned off the communications to that. But sort of this having technology embedded in you or getting that data, there's absolutely a privacy concern. But I think in the end, we're going to trade off some of that potential loss of privacy with the opportunity that it gives us as individuals and as a population.
This is big. This is a kind of continental divide here as we head into this full awareness of what's going on with our bodies and awareness that's transmitted out. The Internet of Things coming right in. Jay in Farmington, Connecticut. Jay, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I had two things I wanted to say. A lot of them had been touched on over the last few minutes. One of them was, I think, based on what I've heard so far, it sounds like they're kind of attacking it from the wrong angle. It seems like it should be more about the way that the medicine is reacting as opposed to whether or not you're just taking it, because that crosses a major line on the privacy to security that ever lessening line that we have as Americans. Every day there's something new coming out that says it's supposed to help us, but in reality we're giving up a huge portion of what we had.
In terms of privacy. Yeah, I hear that, Jay. And of course, if you want to, you're saying let's focus on how the medicine's reacting, but to know that, you've got to know that it's in there, so they'll know both. I appreciate your call. Brian, stand by. I want to bring Dr. Paul Applebaum in, psychiatrist, leading expert on legal and ethical issues in medicine and psychiatry. He's at Columbia University, professor there, director of the Division of Law, Ethics, and Psychiatry there, former president of the American Psychiatric Association. Dr. Applebaum, Paul Applebaum, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be with you.
What sort of ethical issues do you see the digital pill raising the curtain on here?
Well, you know, the place to start is probably to note that before most medical interventions are introduced into practice, we have data that suggests that they are actually more helpful than they are harmful.
Okay.
And the FDA approval of this device came without such data. That is, we don't know whether embedding a sensor in pills actually will increase adherence to medication regimens, and we don't know what the potential negative effects will be. And that seems disturbing in its own right, particularly because the negative effects are potentially not trivial.
What's the negative effect? I mean, we heard the founder of the company saying it's just like having a couple of cashews, an inch of banana, you know, a little bit of a halibut. Materially, this little bit of silicon and copper and magnesium is no more than you would find in ordinary foods.
Well, some of your callers have already alluded to some potential negative effects or concerns.
Like getting wired into the matrix and losing all track of reality.
Yeah,
okay.
The effect on reality, perceptions by people with psychotic disorders, the potential negative impact on privacy. But I think, you know, even more significant is the potential effect on the doctor-patient relationship.
How so?
So let's assume that these sensors are not embedded in all pills. They're expensive, and we wouldn't need to do that.
Though I should note that they're claiming they won't be expensive, and they could show up all over the place. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right.
Please.
Well, so that remains to be seen. They haven't yet priced the Abilify with the sensor embedded in it. But you're one of my patients, and you come to me, and I say, you know, Tom, I want you to take this particular pill, which is going to transmit information back to me, because I want to know whether you're taking the pill or not.
Yeah.
If I say that to you, I'm communicating something to you. I'm communicating that I don't trust you.
Yeah.
I don't trust you to be taking the pill. And I think we don't know what the long-term effects on doctor-patient relationships are from sending that kind of message to patients. Moreover, if I discover that you're in fact not taking your pills regularly, then I have a confrontation that I have to have with you about that, which can be exceedingly unpleasant. If I don't trust you, maybe you don't trust me. Maybe you don't trust the medical system as a whole. The downsides here are not at all innocuous to think about.
But Dr. Applebaum, Brian Anthony at MIT sees a future where we'll all have a kind of dashboard that's rather, I guess, transparent to medical providers, and they'll see all kinds of information about us over our lifetimes, that the notion of our bodies as a closed system may be coming to the end of its run.
Well, maybe that's true. And before we get there, I would hope we would ask some of the questions that we're talking about now. That is, what effect does it have on our willingness to engage with the medical care system? I'd also note it's different if it affects everybody than if I'm selecting you as the person who I don't trust and who I want to take this special pill.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the coming of the digital pill. You take it, it tracks you, and where that takes medicine. We're going to talk a little bit later in this hour about the individual mandate and the Republican tax package that would get rid of it, what that would mean for health coverage and for the tax bill itself. But first, we're on the Internet of Things coming inside the human body. The FDA has this week approved the first of these. It would be a little ingestible sensor on a special kind of Abilify pill that will let your doctor know if you're taking your pills. And, of course, this could be applied much more widely. Brian Anthony is with us. He's co-director of the Medical Electronic Device Realization Center at MIT. Pictures a future where we're very transparent to medical caretakers and possibly more from the inside out. Dr. Paul Applebaum is with us. He is former president of the American Psychiatric Association, now at Columbia University, professor there looking at ethics, law, psychiatry, and more. You can join us. They've been playing with these pills for a while now. This was Laura Caldwell told CNBC last year about her experience of taking a digital pill, this kind, for a heart condition.
This helps to remind you, you've got it right in front of you, you know it's time to take it, so you do.
Was there any hesitation when they're like, all right, we're going to put in the sensor?
A little bit. It was a little bit of a concern, yes. But they assured me it's not harmful. They dissolve your system. I was more worried about my doctor being able to say, okay, look, you're not doing what you say you're doing, and I can see that. But that's never been an issue.
Never been an issue for her, but it could become an issue. Here's a Dr. Edward Boyer. He's a physician researcher at University of Massachusetts Medical School, researching digital pills, talking about how the pills can help doctors guide patients' behavior.
I will know within a few minutes of when somebody takes their medications. Conceivably, if they don't take their medications, I can respond before those behaviors that support non-adherence become ingrained in somebody's behavioral repertoire.
Ingrained, and there you get into the whole behavior issue. So, Paul, what about the idea of a transparent human health from the inside? That seems to be what Brian Anthony is anticipating here. And in a way, it's a medical dream to know what's going on with you so you don't, I mean, even our car dashboard tells us, you know, if the tire pressure's low or I'm low on oil, but we don't really haven't really had that thoroughly for the human body in some ways. But Paul, it's a dream.
Yeah, and it could actually turn out for the right people in the right circumstances to be enormously helpful. I think we have to be open to that possibility. So, for example, a colleague of mine suggested that rather than starting with people with schizophrenia, that it might have made more sense to start with people with Alzheimer's and other dementing illnesses.
Mm-hmm. Who simply, just forget.
They just forget. It's not that they don't want to take the pills, it's just that they forget. So for people like that, this could be enormously helpful. I don't think it's going to be one size fits all. I think we're going to have to test this and see who it works for and for whom it may actually be detrimental.
I mean, we've got all kinds of response here. Neil says this will drive a lot of people over the edge. Some already think the government has put a chip in them. I guess sometimes that's no laughing matter. Carolyn wants to know, when does it stop the tracking sensor? Is it followed into the sewage system? I don't know. Are we going to have like a, you know, we already hear all the time about all these pills that go down the drain, and it's going to be a world, Brian, full of beeping signals coming out of the tummies of jellyfish or something?
I believe this pill in particular, the sensor in particular, was, as it was noted, made out of digestible material.
So it just so gets it should, dissolved like everything else.
I believe it's consumed.
Yeah. I also wonder, there's people thinking about the business side of this. Lane writes, couldn't insurance companies use this tech to deny coverage if you miss a dose, like a warranty that voids if it's missed? Or, Paul, I'll ask you about this one as well. maybe give people a choice between an insurance discount of X percent or dividend from the selling customer. From, you know, if, would you get a cheaper insurance if you agree to take pills where they know you're taking them? Or our listener is saying here, what if you got cheaper insurance if you allowed data from inside you to be sold to third parties? Oh, my goodness. Can you see this coming, Paul?
Yeah, you know, I think that's all quite imaginable. We now have companies out there that are selling genetic data that they collected from people who simply wanted to know more about their ancestry. So commercialization of this information seems to be absolutely a possibility.
Wow, move over Facebook. I mean, this is way beyond what I'm pressing like on. If they can tell them, I don't know, every little ping and pong of my body as we go. Eric in Harvard, Massachusetts. Eric, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Great show. It's a trade-off. We, you know, obviously there are things that we don't really want people to be able to know about us, but for as far as something that I would like to know, and I've thought about this for years, why isn't there a pill that does this? The acid balance in your stomach is very key to digestion, and I would love to know how to be able to track that over time. It changes a lot and affects your health a lot. So if there was something which would do that, I would opt for it.
So if Brian and MIT come up with some kind of little, I don't know, fishing bobber that hangs out in your stomach and lets you know what the acid is, you'd be for that. What do you think, Brian?
I don't know if it's going to hang out in your stomach and not go anyplace without it being implanted into the stomach lining somehow. But certainly you could imagine a series of pills that you would take on a regular basis to monitor the state of your digestive tract.
And what other kinds of things could be continuously monitored?
Ingested? I think things are going to pass through. But otherwise,
if we blood become pressure, part of the Internet of Things, if our bodies join it.
Yeah. Blood pressure, heart rate, EKG, respiration, acid level in the stomach is a very interesting one. I think the list of physiological signals that doctors use now are constrained by the technologies that they have when you go see them.
Mm-hmm.
But the other physiological markers that can be coming from the body, your hydration level by looking at properties of your skin or your fingernails. We have a very rich set of data that we could be collecting.
Adrenaline, hormones. I don't know. Basically any chemical situation, I suppose, one way or another, you could track.
It's conceivable.
Ilona in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ilona, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
My comment is something that in medical teams or treatment teams, rather, it's very important and nobody seems to have talked about yet, and is the human agent, the patient, him or herself, as an active part of any treatment. So this pill will pretty much get rid of it. And I don't know how that would be a positive impact on any sort of treatment.
I mean, this goes
behavioral.
Yeah, this goes back to the trust issue that Dr. Applebaum raised. Ilona, I appreciate your call. I mean, Paul, this is back in your wheelhouse. I guess I just find myself wondering how we keep track of the implications of this. You can see big positives. You can also see big negatives here. We saw social media and Facebook come on, and everybody just jumped in the pool and loved it. And then now we're looking around and saying, oh, wait a minute, there's all kinds of bad ways this could be used. How do we keep track of this over time, Paul Applebaum? How this is deployed, used, misused?
Yeah, so, you know, I think probably the most troubling part of this whole thing is that we're having the discussion now in the absence of those data.
It's FDA approved as of this week.
Right, it sure is. But what they were approving was its safety and not the effects it would have when implemented. And we don't know what those are. I would hope that funding would be available through NIH, presumably, to follow people who use this and ascertain how effective it is and what kinds of consequences it has. But at this point, there's no guarantee that in fact, will occur.
Brian Anthony, who's keeping a wise eye on this, even as the technology is so exciting?
Well, recognizing that there is a lot of stuff that we don't know, the NIH has implemented a program called I think it's called All of Us now. Their intent is to enroll 1 million people
In the Matrix?
In the Matrix, nationwide, from all walks of life, all focusing on historically underrepresented populations as well, but to not be looking at things like the pill in particular, but sort of aggregating digital health records from a million people so that we can start to ask these questions as a population, and enabling this a better understanding of what are the opportunities for individuals and populations if we have this all this data, and what's out there that we're already missing.
Good to be on top of it in that way. I mean, things start out as sci-fi. They become real. Proteus, the company that came up with this ingestible sensor. Our listeners writing in to remind us that Proteus was the name of that miniaturized submarine in that very old movie Fantastic Voyage from back in the 60s where they injected, I think Raquel Welch was in that submarine, injected into somebody's bloodstream. And now here we are, and the digital pill has arrived. I want to thank both of you for being with us. Brian Anthony at MIT's Engineering and Manufacturing Program. Thank you very much for being here.
Tom, enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
And Dr. Paul Applebaum at Columbia University. Thank you so much for your insights today, Dr. Applebaum.
My pleasure.
In a moment, the Republican push to repeal the individual mandate as part of their tax plan. This is On Point. The newest draft of the Republican tax bill, released late last night, would repeal the Affordable Care Act's requirement that all Americans either purchase health insurance or pay a penalty, the individual mandate. Joining me now from Capitol Hill to look at why this move, and now, is Reuters correspondent Amanda Becker. Amanda, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here. How did this show up on the table?
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Well, we started to get wind of this yesterday morning, that they might at least talk about including a repeal of Obamacare's individual mandate. Then the Republicans had their weekly policy lunch, and as they were coming out, they said that that was the main thing that they had been talking about. And then we heard shortly after from Senator Mitch McConnell that he thought it would help their tax plan along and that they were going to be including it.
This is a kind of twofer for Republicans, right? They need to, under the rules they want to pass this tax plan with, which allow them to do it with a simple majority, they can't increase the deficit by more than $1.5 trillion. That sounds like a lot already, but they're over, I think, in the Senate plan anyway. This would save something like $330, $40 billion over the next decade, I think?
Yes, that's right. And that is one of the reasons, and probably the main reason, that they decided to do this. They were kind of in a pinch. They needed to come up with more money. As you said, they can't go over $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. And beyond that window, it's not supposed to increase the deficit at all. So this is one thing that they decided to do in this revised plan to bring it within kind of that $1.5 trillion in that space that they're allowed to go to.
Here was Mitch McConnell yesterday in the press conference saying he's optimistic about this helping.
We're optimistic that inserting the individual mandate repeal would be helpful, and that's obviously the view of the Senate Finance Committee Republicans as well.
The Finance Committee Republicans, because, of course, this would help reduce that deficit. Of course, I also see these numbers, Amanda, that it would also leave a whole lot more Americans without health insurance at the end of that decade or sooner.
Yes, millions more without insurance. And that, you know, this also, as the Senate Finance Committee has started doing kind of their markup of what's been released, one big point has been, you know, whether this process has been bipartisan or not. And you have Senator Hatch, a Republican who chairs the committee, saying, you know, I've solicited input from all of you. And you have all the Democrats saying that that's not true.
I mean, I think we got past that a long time ago. There's nothing about this that's bipartisan, is there?
Yes. And adding, you know, this repeal of the individual mandate, which could end up, you know, we could see as many as 13 million more people uninsured by 2027, and it really kind of undermines the entire law. This essentially ensures that no Democrat in the Senate is going to consider signing on to this tax legislation.
But all they need is 51, and they got Mike Pence there. It might mean people without health insurance. What would it have ramifications for people who do have insurance? Would it change their premiums if you take that 13 million or more out of the system, Amanda?
So essentially, essentially what happens, the point of the individual mandate was to encourage, you know, younger, healthier people to be a part of the insurance pool. And the idea is that will drive down costs for everyone. So if those people now don't face this, you know, payment that they'll have to make for not having insurance, it's estimated that the cost of these policy premiums could go up 10% annually over the next decade. So it probably will lead to more expensive health insurance for people in Obamacare marketplaces.
Democrats quick to jump on that yesterday. Here was Democratic Senator Maggie Hassan telling reporters how she thought killing the individual mandate as part of the tax plan would affect health insurance coverage.
After their failed attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, what we just heard from Republican leadership is that they're threatening to use this tax bill to undermine health insurance coverage for millions of Americans and drive up their premiums.
Amanda Becker with Reuters. So let's look first at that. Would this be like the, you know, the nail in the coffin on Obamacare? Would this sink it?
It certainly wouldn't do much to help it or to fix any of the problems they've been trying to fix with it. Now, several senators have also already pointed out, Republican senators, that the reason it might be okay to do this now when they wouldn't have voted for it before is that they're also considering bipartisan legislation, the Alexander Murray bill in the Senate, that would kind of shore up some of these exchanges. And so they're saying if we do these things at the same time, it might be okay to go ahead and repeal the individual mandate.
But what about the chances for passage of the tax bill itself? Does this make it more or less likely that this great big package goes through?
Until yesterday, I would have guessed that it would have made it more difficult. However, I do not think that Republican leadership would have agreed to put this in if they hadn't already spoken to some of the senators who might be on the fence and gotten assurances that this would not be a deal breaker for them.
So you're saying it makes it more likely to go through, and that would mean the tax bill, with all of its implications that we've talked about, and a big blow to the Affordable Care Act at the same time.
That would be the effect. I hate to predict the chances of things in Congress because it's been so unpredictable over the last year or so. But I do think that this is probably an indication that a couple of the senators, you know, at least one, who, you know, voted against repeal in the past might be willing to do this in tax reform.
And all of this on a very fast track. Republicans want it done. And done soon. Amanda Becker with Reuters, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks so much for joining us today. On Point is produced by Brian Amaral, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, Allison Poley, Tanya Rowley, and James Ross, with help from Gretchen Voss, Catherine Proctor, Anna Bauman, and Whitney Leonard. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. It's great to be with you. This is On Point.